It's all quiet in the underground bunker. Doors closed, locks bolted. But the Great One isn't just resting on his laurels. He's making sure your weekend is even better by giving you his best. This is the best of Mark Levin.
I went to California over the weekend to go to a fantastic event at the Claremont Institute. I have deep and long ties to the Claremont Institute. They have a Lincoln Fellow program and other programs since. And I was in the first class of that Lincoln Fellow program. Good Lord. It's got to be more 35 years ago, give or take. And at that time, the president of Claremont was Larry Arnn, who's the president now of Hillsdale College. And I want to thank them for a very kind reception, all the people who were there. I want to thank them for giving me the Statesmanship Award, which is a big deal there at Claremont and for me, and I appreciate it. As you can tell, I sent a little under the weather because I'm a lot under the weather. It never fails because when you meet a lot of great people, they want to talk to you, shake your hand, and you get to smell their breath, Mr. Producer. I mean, right in your face. And so here I am. Now, that said, it was a room of tremendous patriots. An honor to be with them. And I want to thank Molly Hemingway and her wonderful husband, Mark. Had a great time. We were at the table together, and she introduced me, and she is fantastic. I was sitting next to Mr. and Mrs. John Eastman, which was also a great honor. History will deal with what was done to him. It's not possible for the body politic to deal with it today. It's so corrosive and so tyrannical. But all through the weekend and before, I do my research. It's nonstop. Did it right up to the beginning of this program. Do it till 2, 3, 4 in the morning. One of the things I found about 48 hours ago is when I go to this site Memory, which I told you I encourage you to do, memri.org, memri.org. I found this protest at something called the International Al-Quds, Al-Quds, that's Iranian, rally in Dearborn, Michigan on Friday. And just to show you how important you are and how important we are, I posted it on my social sites, Twitter and then the rest. And it started to work its way through social media, through independent conservative news organizations, and then finally into Fox. It is not something that you see on NBC or ABC or any of the Sunday shows, not one. It's not something you'll see in most of the Democrat Party newspapers either, because they want to conceal what's going on in this country. And what's going on in this country, we don't know the extent of it, we don't know the numbers, but we know it's there, and we know it's growing. There's an enemy from within. American-hating, Israel-hating, Christian-hating, Jew-hating Islamists. I didn't say Muslims. I didn't say Arabs. I said Islamists. Islamists are radicals. Islamists are violent. Islamists threaten. Islamists commit acts of violence. I've told you over and over again, if you hate America, you hate Israel. If you hate Israel, you hate America. And this is demonstrated so clearly and so utterly. And so I'm not looking for any of these news organizations or internet organizations or cable channels to say, oh, here's where we got it from. But I got it from memri.org, memri.org. And I pushed it out into the media. It's important to see what we post. I don't engage in the comments because so many of them are bots who stick stuff in there, and I don't really care. So let's begin. You need to understand that Joe Biden has sent senior campaign operatives into Dearborn, Michigan to try and protect his vote. This is Rashida Tlaib territory. that he is utterly destroying the state of Israel, its government, the prime minister, to the extent he can, on behalf of these individuals because he wants their votes. And it's the same Joe Biden that threw in the Senate's favorite Klansman when he first got to the Senate. Now he's throwing in with Hamas Nazi supporters, Iran supporters, and American haters. Cut one, go.
We've been asked in the past, why are our protests on the International Day of Quds, why are they so anti-America? Why don't we just focus more on Israel and not talk so much about America? Gaza has shown the entire world why these protests are so anti-America. Because it's the United States government that provides the funds for all of the atrocities that we just heard about. And this is why Imam Khomeini, who declared the International Day of Quds, this is why he would say to pour all of your chants and all of your shouts upon the head of America.
Now understand, folks, Quds is the, it's like the SS of Iran. When you see commercials, Tunnels to Towers, Wounded Warriors, these other fantastic groups, and these men without limbs, some of them with horrendous brain damage and so forth. The Quds were behind most of that. The Quds. Particularly as it applies to the war in Iraq. I want you to understand that this person and these people who are rallying to this cause are the enemy. They're a domestic enemy. And if we had a real administration that cared about our country's security, our country's future, they would be looking at the status of each one of these individuals. If they're a citizen, if they seek citizenship, or if they're not a citizen, and deal with them accordingly. And let me suggest to the FBI, rather than infiltrating the Catholic Church, which is not a danger to anybody, you need to get your head around and your hands around what's going on in Dearborn, Michigan, and places just like it. These are no-go zones in America now. I've talked about this last week. These are no-go zones. Certain people of certain faith, with certain symbols on their clothing or on their heads or certain facial hair, they can't go into these areas. It's like the suburbs of Paris. Or towns around London and Berlin. It's here, right now. This is who's in the streets with the American Marxists from our universities, our faculties, who are marching down the streets. They don't represent America. They hate America. Did you hear Joe Biden say a word about this today? Not a word. When's the last time he stood up against these Islamists and talked about anti-Semitism in this country? Never. Never. Has Chuck Schumer talked about this? Not a word. Hakeem Jeffries? Not a word. Instead, we get Nancy Pelosi, who signed a letter with 37 other clowns, insisting that the Biden administration literally cut off arms to the state of Israel. I heard a friendly voice on TV today, not one of us, conservative, but a friendly voice say, all Biden wants to know is what is Israel's exit strategy and present it to them. Let me explain something. Israel has no exit strategy. That's their country. That's their country. There's nowhere to go. They're surrounded. As I speak, missiles keep getting fired in still from Gaza. Missiles are fired in from Lebanon. Imagine living under these circumstances. Day in and day out, day in and day out. This is an advanced, democratic, Judeo-Christian country. It's a Western country surrounded in many cases by barbarian terrorists and barbarian terrorist regimes. And I would add as a footnote, ladies and gentlemen, if you've been checking these the information out the last 2 days, Hamas and Qatar are now trying to overthrow the King of Jordan. Right now. with the backing of Iran. It's no two-state solution issue. This is a worldwide effort. I've talked to you about this before. This is a second Muslim crusade. Now, by that, I don't mean Muslims who obviously aren't involved in this. I'm talking about people, Islamists, using the Muslim faith to try and conquer the world. In one town after another, one state after another, hell, one country after another. And look at the influence they have in the United States today. Look at the influence they have in the American media. Look at the influence they have in the Democrat Party. Look at the influence they have in the White House and the State Department and the Defense Department. They have far more influence than any Jewish organization or Christian organization. They have an enormous amount of control and influence. Continue, please. Go ahead.
Malcolm X said, and I quote, "We live in one of the rottenest countries that has ever existed on this earth."
I love it when people with thick accents in this country, who don't have to be here, or maybe they're second generation, talk about how horrible America is. You need to hear this. You need to understand what's going on. You're not going to see it on MSNBC or CNN. You're not going to see it on CBS, NBC, or ABC. You're not going to see it on the Sunday shows. You're not going to read about it in the front pages of the New York Times or the Washington Post. You're not. And yet this is what's going on. This is what's going on. And this is what Biden has responded to. And Blinken is in support of. Blinken is in support of this. As are the Marxists, the Bernie Sanders, the AOCs, the overthrow of America. That's their wet dream. Go ahead.
Joe, that has to go. It's the entire system that has to go. Any system that would allow such atrocities and such devilry to happen and would support it, such a system does not deserve to exist on God's earth. And so when these fools ask us if Israel has the right to exist, the chant "Death to Israel" has become the most logical chant shouted across the world today.
Mm-hmm. Cut two.
Imam Khomeini recognized that Israel is an evil settler colonialist project. He realized it is a cancer, and he established this day. Israel before this, brothers and sisters, was a sacred cow. Nobody could criticize Israel. Everybody was terrified of being anti-Semitic. Everybody was afraid of them. But now the people of conscience very openly will criticize Israel. They recognize Israel for what it is. Israel is ISIS. They are Nazis. They are fascists. They are racist. The people of the world now know this.
Mm-hmm. I believe that was an imam. Again, I want you to bookmark memory.org, M-E-M-R-I.org. You'll be way ahead of the knowledge game before any of these other news outlets even think about reporting this. And the border's wide open. People coming in, including from the Middle East. You have to assume a certain percentage of them hate the country. You have to assume a certain percentage of people coming into this country from wherever they are want to do violence to this country. And when you heard these two rat-fink reprobates, I wanted you to know that these are the people that Joe Biden is carrying favor with. And he never says a damn thing. Nothing. And the FBI knows what's going on in Dearborn, Michigan. And when the editor of memory.org wrote his piece in the Wall Street Journal, the rest of the media attacked him. Because the rest of the media are perfectly comfortable with this. Their silence speaks 1,000 volumes. Right, Jake Tapper? Right, Wolf Blitzer? Right? Right, Joe and Mika Scarborough?
Mark Levin.
Did you know Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in America with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the U.S.? They have everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants, much, much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for your climate and space. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online, and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. My wife Julie and I decided it was time to add more flowering trees to our landscape, and Fast Growing Tree was a great resource for us. A large selection and no hassle ordering or shipping. This spring, they have the best deals online, up to half off on selected plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code LEVIN at checkout. LEVIN. Now that's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using code LEVIN. VIN at checkout. FastGrowingTrees.com, code LEVIN. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. Please visit FastGrowingTrees.com for details.
Making your weekend even better. This is the best of Mark Levin.
So the state of Nebraska with just a couple electoral votes is crucial. You know, Maine does what Maine does, but Nebraska has the same bizarre system. They assign an electoral vote to each of their congressional districts, each of the two. One of them is a Democrat district in Omaha. And yet the Republican always wins a significant majority in Nebraska. So it's set up in a way that the Republicans lose an electoral college vote. And so there's a movement afoot to fix that. So when Donald Trump wins Nebraska, he's not assigned one electoral vote and Biden one electoral vote. Notice none of the dark blue states do that because it's stupid. Notice none of the other red states do what Maine has done because it's stupid. But it was done about 30 years ago, so it's time to fix it. The problem is you do have some foot draggers in the Republican Party. I know it seems insane, but you do. And time for the legislature is running out. So what do you do? Well, the governor needs to call a special session, emergency session of the legislature, and get this legislation passed. You know, damn well, if there was a Democrat running the show under these circumstances, they do whatever they have to do. And so I want to encourage you, my fellow patriots, that for once we have something that we can do rather than wring our hands and whine. And I'm going to look for more and more opportunities like this as well. I want you to get engaged. You can even sit at your chair. You don't have to even move. I want you to get engaged. And here's what I want you to do. The governor's office is closed today. It's in Nebraska. I'm going to hand you his number as well as the link to his office and that contact information as well. We're going to post it on all my platforms, including Twitter and all the rest. And I'm also going to mention them to you so you can go ahead and use them. Now, obviously, with the link to the governor's office, there's other ways to communicate with his office other than by phone. If you call now, you're just going to get, and I tried it, a recording saying the office is closed and so forth. And earlier today, they shut the phone off, so you couldn't even get through that way. But there are other ways if you go to the link on the website. And again, we will post them, but I want to tell you what they are. And again, we need a mass Levin surge tomorrow if you're calling by phone, tonight if you're using the link to the website of the governor's office, to politely and civilly urge him, governor, you need to call a special session of the legislature and change the way the electoral votes are assigned in Nebraska. Winner should take all, and encourage him to do it. Encourage him to do it. Here's the number. Again, I'll post it so you don't have to memorize it. 402-471-2244. Again, 402, for you technocrats, 402-471-2244. 402-471-2244. It'll be on all our social platforms. As well as you can go to the to the site, the link of the governor, governor.nebraska.gov. And again, that will be on all our social sites. Mr. Producer is already putting it up if he hasn't already. It's up. governor.nebraska.gov, G-O-V. It's Governor Jim Pillen. Or Pillen, I should say. P-I-L-L-E-N. And again, just politely, they need to fix their electoral college count system there. We can't lose this election by one electoral college vote, folks. It's just ridiculous that we seem to do things that are counterintuitive and counterproductive. As I say, only two states do this. One of them is Maine. Maine can be problematic. Sometimes we win it, sometimes we don't. But Nebraska, we win. And we're handed one of the electoral college votes to the Democrats every time. That's just stupid. There's really no rationale for this. That's not populism. We're talking about a presidential election, not a congressional election here. And so you count the votes of the state, and the people of the state decide, not the people of Omaha. They can participate like everybody else, but they shouldn't be able to throw a presidential election in one direction or another because they support a Democrat. And so again, I want to encourage you to do that. If you can't remember the numbers, the link that I just told you, well, we're all over the place. Mark Levin Show Twitter, Mark Levin Show True Social, Mark Levin this, Mark Levin Show that. And I want to encourage you to do it. So this is an official second Levin surge tonight. The first one is to go to tedcruz.org, and please do whatever you can to help the senator. He is a leading light in the United States Senate. If he's replaced by one of these left-wing, you know, Senate Democrats who goes along with the most extremist types from the state of Texas, that'll be a complete disaster in lieu of Ted Cruz. Complete disaster. And then we need Nebraska. We need Nebraska to get back in line with the rest of us, with the rest of our states, and stop handing an electoral college to the Democrats. Electoral college votes are not supposed to be handed out to cities. States get them. It's the vote of the states, not the vote of pieces of the states. We shouldn't be winning in significant numbers in Nebraska and handing one electoral college vote to Biden. It's just ridiculous. So I encourage you again tonight if you want to use the link, but certainly tomorrow with the call or the link if they unplug the phone again, to contact the governor's office. The number again, as I pull it up here, let's see here, 402-471-2244, 402-471-2244. Or you can go to the website. Again, all this stuff will be on my social sites. You can go to the website. Let's see here, Mr. Producer. Here it is, which is, what the hell is it, Rich? You just posted it here. Let's see. governor.nebraska.gov, G-O-V, governor.nebraska.gov, and I think we may actually have his email address, too. Once I go to contact info on the page, once you get into the link, and you'll have his email number, his email address, rather, contact info on the page. I'm not trying to complicate it. It's actually quite simple. There's one link, and there's one phone number. If you find you're blocked on one, use the other. If you want to act tonight, use the link, not the phone number. I think I've spelled it out pretty straightforward. Very, very important that they call a special session and get this done, as the Democrats would. All right. There's no way I'm going to be able to cover all this. It's a very important piece that nobody's even mentioned. It's a piece by Awi Ferdegrun and Rand Kivitz. Israel's acknowledgement that the drone attack mistakenly killed seven aid workers in Gaza has led to renewed criticism of the Jewish state. The tragic incident came less than 3 weeks after a report issued by the Integrated Food Security Phase Classification, whatever the hell that is, claimed that 1.1 million people, nearly half the population of Gaza, faced, quote, catastrophic food insecurity, unquote. Conditions at the northern Gaza will face famine by May if hostilities continue. The Europeans' High Representative for Foreign Affairs and Security Policy, Josep Borrell, blamed Israel, saying starvation is used as a weapon of war. Israel's provoking famine. U.S. officials unveiled a U.N. ceasefire resolution that cited famine conditions after the IPC report came out. But Hamas, which has been hoarding food and stealing from Gazans, is the root cause of Gaza's suffering. As Congressman Jim Hines, a Connecticut Democrat and ranking member of the House Intelligence Committee, stated in a CNN interview, quote, Hamas has a long history of stealing aid, needs to stop that in the interest of the people they purport to represent. Well, that's a tough message. Israel has tried for years to balance its interests with those of innocent Palestinians. Its maritime blockade did not stop Gaza from being self-sufficient in fruits and vegetables with enough left over to potentially export. Despite the war, three-quarters of greenhouse acres were still available as of February 15th. So in other words, they didn't take out the farms and everything. According to a United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization report, which has the latest available data, Israel's coordination of government activities in the territories indicates that bakeries can still provide over, quote, 2 million breads, rolls, and pita breads a day. Since the war began, the Israel Defense Forces have engaged in what West Point Urban Warfare Studies Chairman John Spencer was on my show the other night, described as a remarkable, historic new standard for wartime treatment of civilians, resulting in a civilian-to-combat morality rate that is historically low for modern urban warfare. He said Israel regularly provides warnings of impending attacks, assists with evacuations, even stops its attacks on a daily basis to allow humanitarian aid to arrive. As I said at the top of the show, I didn't invent this thought, but it's a brilliant thought. This is the only war with a victim that is now defending itself from the annihilation of the perpetrator is supposed to be feeding the perpetrator's population. So Israel's not only fighting to protect its citizens, it's supposed to be feeding the citizens who voted in Hamas. Now, how many of you veterans out there, especially combat veterans, have you ever seen anything like this before? Despite the recent tragedy, the IDF tries to ensure that Gazans don't starve throughout the war. The data show that 290,000 tons of food and beverages have been delivered to Gaza since October. Recently, as many as 200 truckloads a day. Full distribution of these supplies would deliver about 1.82 pounds of food daily for the 2 million people in Gaza. Based on FAO estimates of the average daily consumption in Asia and Africa, where Gaza is situated, this alone will be enough to supply 50% of Gazans' daily consumption needs on top of the food they continue to produce themselves. Israel has also collaborated with America to provide further aid. The Biden administration recently announced plans to build an emergency pier that would provide 2 million meals per day. This idea was first suggested to Biden by Netanyahu last October, just weeks after the war started, by Netanyahu. Unfortunately, this is not the first time that leaders have been misled about the data surrounding the Israel-Hamas war. For example, policymaker and news media have repeatedly cited casualty numbers. We've talked about this ad infinitum, taken from none other than Hamas itself. And of course, Abraham Weiner, who I brought on my Fox show as well as this radio show, professor of statistics data science at Wharton University of Pennsylvania, he said the numbers aren't real. For one thing, he writes, there's little variability in the daily reporting. He goes through it, and we've already done that. But Biden doesn't care. He doesn't care about facts. He doesn't want to believe any of that. He's on a mission. And he wants to get a vote from the Dearbornistan Islamists, who are now out of the woods, talking about destroying America from within. The enemy from within. And it goes on. And it goes on.
Mark Levin. You're listening to the best of Mark Levin.
There's a breaking story this evening, which kind of illustrates and underscores what I've been talking about, the violent terrorist mindset in the United States, with open borders and the Democrat Party embracing, if not promoting, but certainly not condemning, the Islamist mindset that is spreading like wildfire in this country from one no-go zone to another. We played the memory video, audio for you folks, where an Islamist imam in some other rat fink, were talking about destroying America, that America needed to be destroyed, and they didn't quote Martin Luther King, they quoted Malcolm X. People come into this country, you have a first generation and a second generation in the case of those two people, and they come here to hate it. I've also spent months trying to explain that this ideology is not just about slaughtering the Jews, although that certainly is a priority. It's about destroying us, because we're the most powerful force, and not just militarily, but morally and constitutionally, that stands against these Islamists. So what happened today? From Fox, FBI arrests Idaho 18-year-old for violent plot to attack churches on behalf of ISIS, Justice Department says. They arrested an 18-year-old in Idaho after uncovering his truly horrific and violent plot to attack churches in Coeur d'Alene this past week on behalf of ISIS. Alexander Mercurio is now facing a federal charge of attempting to provide material support or resources to a designated foreign terrorist organization after the FBI says he devised a plan to, quote, incapacitate his father, restrain him using handcuffs, steal his firearms to use for maximum casualties, quote unquote, in an attack he had been planning to carry out in northern Idaho, the resort city in northern Idaho, Coeur d'Alene, on Sunday. The defendant allegedly pledged loyalty to ISIS, sought to attack people attending churches in Idaho, a truly horrific plan which was detected and thwarted by the FBI's Joint Terrorism Task Force, FBI Director Christopher Wray said in a statement. The Department of Justice will continue to relentlessly pursue, disrupt, and hold accountable those who would commit acts of terrorism against the United States. And who are they? I don't think you'll find them in the Catholic Church. I don't think you'll find them in a temple, Jewish temple. Who are they? In a complaint, a criminal complaint, the FBI says the investigation began when Mercurio, who's a resident of Coeur d'Alene, quote, reached out to confidential human sources online and indicated his support for ISIS and terrorist organizations. Mercurio spread ISIS propaganda online and solicited ISIS's involvement in and approval of his propaganda efforts, discussing travel from the United States to join ISIS in concerted and planned ways to support ISIS financially. His attack plan involved using flame-covered weapons, explosives, knives, a machete, a pipe, and ultimately firearms. His plan grew more precise as he eventually identified the specific church and date on which he planned to attack. And they grabbed him the day before he was going to attack. You better get used to this. I don't mean used to terrorism. I mean used to these threats. And the FBI is not going to be able to stop all of them. You can't play defense. We have an immigration system. Check that. We don't have an immigration system. Any would-be terrorists from the Middle East can slip right into this country, and I guarantee you they have. We have Soros prosecutors in this country that will not prosecute individuals. Individuals who are recidivists, who even do violent crimes. You have coddling judges. But worst off, you have a president of the United States who won't stand up to anti-Semitism. Instead, he spreads it with his blood libels day in and day out against the state of Israel. Hamas doesn't fear Biden. Iran doesn't fear Biden. Hezbollah, Houthis, they all laugh. I mean, he's insisting that Israel provide more food, more medicine to people in Gaza, even though Israel is trying to defeat their leadership. And that leadership didn't shoot its way to the top. That leadership was elected. And then they shot their way to the top to stay there. In fact, the so-called peaceful Palestinians, Arafat's PLO, they're talking about a united government if they can just get their hands on Judea and Samaria, where Hamas would have cabinet positions. Oh, I bet you didn't know that. So in the middle of all this, Joe Biden is actually reaching out to Dearbornistan because he doesn't want to lose the votes of the Rashida Tlaib constituency. Of course, the media are not going to report this. They'll attack anybody who exposes it. They can attack all they want. The truth is the truth. They have no influence over people like me. Matter of fact, the more they attack, the more I push back. But you are going to see much more of this. Because of the rhetoric Biden uses, because it's now located. Look, the heads of Hamas, memory.org, interpreted what they said. They are celebrating the position of the Democrat Party and the American media and the Islamists and Marxists in the streets. They're celebrating it. It's open season now. It's open season on the United States. It's open season on Israel. Open season. Dearbornistan, that's what I've been calling it because that's what it is. The propaganda that Joe Biden uses against the state of Israel could be used by skinheads, Klansmen, neo-Nazis, Islamists, his blood libels. And of course, Antony Blinken, whose family's bought and paid for by George Soros, for him this is ideological. He doesn't really care. Everybody said to me, he's actually Jewish, you know. And his mother was Jewish, which is fine. That's great. But he has no connection to the Jewish faith. Well, his grandparents or his great-grandparents or one or more of them had suffered through the Holocaust. But that's not him. He hasn't suffered through anything. And so why is he playing footsie with Iran that wants to create another Holocaust? Why is there helping to fund Iran? I don't give a damn about his lineage. In fact, that underscores what a complete insane buffoon this ideologue is. Blinken's a traitor. He was involved in getting, in the first place in the Obama administration, as Deputy Secretary of State, he was involved in that deal intimately that would ensure that Iran would have nuclear weapons. I know he's involved as Secretary of State to ensure that Iran has nuclear weapons. There's not a single media outlet in America that has asked Blinken or Biden, what are you doing about the nukes that Iran is developing? Even on these surrogate sites, Mediaite, Media Matters, these Soros-related or Dan Abrams-related sites, not a word, nothing. And so here's a case where this guy was found out and nabbed. And there'll be many cases where nobody's found out and not nabbed, and the horror will be done. And even today, Joe Biden has said nothing. He said nothing when the comments were made in Dearbornistan. Nothing. He said nothing when those poison Ivy League presidents of those universities said what they said. He said nothing. No speech to the nation. No concern at all.
Mark Levin. The Great One makes your weekend even better. This is the best of Mark Levin.
Joe Biden, a nasty man who should never have been anywhere close to the Oval Office. Again today, listen to this one. Cut four, go.
My predecessor and his MAGA friends wanted, I love the phrase, the language they use, they want to terminate the Affordable Care Act. Terminate. Well, guess what? Killing millions of Americans, take them off of health care.
You listen to this? Let's just stop a second. Killing millions of Americans. Donald Trump is not a philosophical conservative. When it comes to Medicare and Social Security, when it comes to certain of these programs, healthcare and so forth, he's actually relatively liberal on these programs. And so it's Joe Biden that has the history. And I've played the audio for you repeatedly. I played it, the video on Fox and on The Blaze. Who's gone after Social Security in 1984, 1987, 2004, 2007, four times, at least? Is Obamacare's God's gift? Most people with Obamacare don't care for it that much. Is that the only way to go? No, there's options. There are other ways to address this. So his view is, if you don't support Obamacare, you're going to kill millions of people. Now, they say we should elevate our political speech. Is this elevating it? So far, Donald Trump is the greatest threat to democracy. Donald Trump's going to kill millions of people who are on Obamacare. Donald Trump's going to destroy Social Security and Medicare. Listen to this one. Cut five, Mr. Producer. Go.
When it comes to Social Security and Medicare, my predecessor recently said, quote, there's a lot you can do in terms of cutting.
What he's talking about is fraud. He's never supported cutting it. So Biden is lying again. It's Biden. That's the history of Biden in the Senate, who over and over again talked about that. But listen to his propaganda. Go ahead.
I love it. Right on cue, House Republicans released their budget that would raise the retirement age of Social Security.
What it would do is a proposal that's been on the table for 3 or 4 decades. That is, for people who are, say, 40, 45 years old, they'd raise the retirement age by a couple of years because Social Security is going broke. Trump has not endorsed that. I endorse that. Would you rather be eligible for Social Security at 67 rather than 65 or not have any Social Security whatsoever? That's the issue. But you can't have a rational debate when you have a guy like Biden. Biden can only win. Listen. So just listen to this. So Trump wants to destroy democracy. Trump wants 2 million people to die. Trump wants people on Social Security to go without. He wants people on Medicare to go without. Where is this coming from? It's coming from a man who has used these tactics to character assassinate people before, as chairman of the Foreign Affairs Committee, as chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. He used these tactics against Robert Bork, against Clarence Thomas. He used these tactics against all kinds of nominees for district and circuit judgeships. He uses these tactics when he runs for office, or did, in the Senate. And the media will let him get away with it. He talks about the greatest debt in American history due to Trump because of tax cuts. The problem are not tax cuts. The problem is spending. Everybody said this. Even some people on the left have said this. But he doesn't care. He's got Pinocchio's coming out of his ass from these fact checkers who say, no, that's not what happened. He doesn't care. And this is how he hopes to win. And you might. Because an appellate judge today ruled that the case brought by Alvin Bragg in front of a corrupt judge, intellectually, politically corrupt. I'm not saying he's taking money. I'm saying he's a hack. A case that never should have been brought, a case that was turned down 3 times by the Federal Election Commission, the U.S. Attorney's Office, and his own office, that it should go forward. April 15th. April 15th. That's 6 days from today. 6 days. President Trump will be brought before a phony judge, phony court, phony prosecutor, phony jury. They'll go through the motions. 34 counts, I believe it is. 34. All they need is one. Jury of your peers, not a jury of left-wing Democrats in Manhattan. No, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. And of course, they'll have a right to appeal. But it'll be too late between the media and the way Biden talks and the rest. And they know this. They know this. If I had to sum up Joe Biden, I'd say he's a lowlife. That's basically what he is. He's a lowlife. And I hope everybody regurgitates exactly what I said, friend and foe alike. He's always been a lowlife. Always been a lowlife. Anything for power. He's no real world experience. He gets elected when he's 29. Sworn in when he's 30. He's immediately part of the segregationist racist wing of the Democrat Party. Now he's part of the Marxist fascistic wing of the Democrat Party. Not all that far apart if you give it really serious thought. So he's going to run on lies. Real terrorists have been pardoned by Jimmy Carter, by Bill Clinton, by Barack Obama. Real terrorists. Barack Obama, as I said, was best friends with a domestic terrorist. Two of them. Actually, three of them. Three of them. Joe Biden is the biggest slaver in American history. That's what I would run on a commercial. 100,000 Americans dead, and he pretends he cares about civilians. Just not American civilians, just not Haitian civilians, just not only civilians he cares about, oddly enough, are those who voted for a terrorist regime. And after attack, murder after murder after murder, Israel finally said, we've had enough, we're taking you out. Biden says, no, you're not. In fact, we're going to build a port for the Gazans. And we're going to destroy our 76-year relationship with Israel. Because I need those votes out of Michigan. Look, I'm buying votes left and right with student loan forgiveness, even though it violates the Constitution and a Supreme Court order, a direct order that said no. I will continue to push to topple the state of Israel. I will continue to fund Iran to attack Israel and the United States if I have to. I will continue to keep the border open so we can keep importing future Democrats. Let's be honest, that's what's going on here. What do I give a damn about Israel? What do I give a damn about the southern border? All that matters is my election. Power. That's all I've ever done. That's all I've ever pursued in my entire life. I'm speaking as Biden. Election after election. Power after power. That's what he's doing. Look at the things he says about Trump. He doesn't even call out the Islamists from the other day. Not a word. Nothing. The presidents of these universities, not a word, nothing. Zero. The little Kristallnacht going on all over the country, not a word, nothing. No-go zones now popping up across them, not a word, nothing. Zero. The greatest danger to you, my fellow Americans, is Joe Biden. He's destroying our economy. He's destroying our supply chain. He's destroying our energy system. He's destroying small business. He wants to tax you into oblivion. He wants your money. The only reason they want to raise taxes is so they can control you, so they can control what you earned. Inflation, he denies there's inflation. I ask you, is there inflation? We know that food prices have gone up 40% since the end of 2009. 40%, 40%, $100 in groceries, in a grocery basket today is $140. He doesn't care. You're paying for the food that he puts in his big mouth. You always have. Or the communist Chinese have, one or the other. So Trump is a threat to democracy. Was he a threat to democracy when he was president for 4 years? There's not a single court order that he violated. None. Zero. They tried to take him out from day one. Russia collusion, planning stories, two phony impeachments, a criminal investigation that came up with nothing because there was nothing. It is endless. But this is more than a war on Trump. It's a war on you. Listen to the way he says, MAGA, MAGA, make America great again. MAGA, MAGA. He hates you. He despises you. He doesn't care. Israel goes under, Israel goes under. United States goes under, the United States goes under. Remember what I keep telling you. For a guy like Biden, it's party. Party matters most. Power. Power, power, power. Like these communist regimes. The country is nothing unless it's controlled by their party. A monopoly party. That's what we have. A party that wants to change our election laws. And Schumer tries it every year right out of the box. So they can't lose. And then they talk about voter suppression. The party of voter suppression, talking about voter suppression. They have no respect for black people, none. With the kind of propaganda and rhetoric they use in black communities or focus on black individuals, it's grotesque. While he's Orbel Faubus standing in the schoolhouse doorway preventing little black kids from getting the hell out of these lousy schools. He's the one stopping it because he doesn't believe in integration in our public schools. He said so. Oh, he's changed. No. A chameleon only changes for their own purposes. He's not changed. He's the same hateful bigot he's always been. First it was the blacks, now it's the Jews. It's that simple. Democracy and freedom, the greatest threat is Trump. Who do you think our enemies are rooting for? China and Russia, Iran, North Korea? They're rooting for Biden. Who do you think the drug cartels are rooting for? They're rooting for Biden. They've never had it so good. Who do you think the communist regime in Cuba and Nicaragua and Venezuela, who do you think they're rooting for? Biden. Of course. Who do you think the prisoners, the criminals in our jailhouses across the country are rooting for? Biden. The American Marxists, the American Islamists, who are they rooting for? Biden. Biden. The Democrats always win, Dearbornistan. Why is that? Why is that? It's called a rhetorical question.
Mark Levin.
We're giving you nothing but the best of Mark Levin.
I hope you're well. A couple hours ago, there was headline news, Mr. Producer. I believe it's the last day of Ramadan, Eid, I think it's called. And it's Islam's holy month of fasting. And there was a shooting that occurred in Philadelphia in the Parkside neighborhood. An Eid event. Almost 1,000 people were there. It's a lot of people. And there were gunfire. People got hit. It was a terrible scene, as a matter of fact, in a park. And the media were all geared up. They brought on ex-FBI agents, ex-police, and others that were, if not suggesting, certainly implying that this was a shooting because it was Ramadan, the last day of Ramadan, and 1,000 Muslims were gathered in this one place. Now, let me make something abundantly clear. I have nothing for contempt for anybody who kills anybody. Innocence, period. I have no problem whatsoever with people who practice their faith peacefully. Period. Period. And the funny thing is, people talk to me. The person I work with at my bank is a Pakistani Muslim. People that I know quite well, quite closely, and all sorts of things that we do around this house and we do around our studio, Muslims. And they are disgusted, many of them, with the Islamists because they threaten them too. But stereotypes are created by the media. So when you criticize Islamists, notice I didn't say Muslims. When you criticize Islamists, terrorists who push terrorist ideology, the media want you to say Muslim. Now, the media were all geared up to hit this morning, noon, and night. It's disappeared totally from the headlines now. Why? Well, now we know more facts. Two factions, reports ABC News, pulled out guns and started shooting at each other at the outdoor gathering, according to Philadelphia Police Commissioner Kevin Bethel. 30 shots were fired. A 22-year-old was shot in the stomach during the gunfire. Juvenile self-transported to a hospital with a gunshot wound to the hand. Both are in stable condition. An officer at the event shot a 15-year-old boy who was allegedly armed with a gun. According to Bethel, the teen was shot in the shoulder and leg. The officer recovered the firearm and transported the teen to a hospital. A child also fractured their leg. They were hit by a responding officer's car. Five people have been arrested in connection with the shooting. They include the 15-year-old who was shot by the officer, as well as four suspects, three juveniles and an adult, who fled the scene with guns, multiple guns, according to Bethel. Five weapons were recovered. A motive remains unknown. But they said two factions pulled out guns and started shooting at each other. So the headlines disappear because the media wanted it to be something else. They certainly thought it would be something else. That's not to say that can't happen. There's a lot of very evil people. A lot of very evil people. It's not to say it can't happen, but it didn't. The media, the American media. There's a lot being said today about a gentleman named Yuri Berliner. He's a very courageous man. He's a veteran reporter, employee of PBS, of NPR, rather, and an editor. And he's worked very closely with people who work there for a long time. And apparently he wrote a piece in the Free Press, which I want to get to momentarily. But here's what amazes me. He doesn't tell us anything we didn't know. The fact is that he's very brave in coming out and telling us, reinforcing what we already know. So I would tell my colleagues in TV and radio, it wouldn't hurt you. It wouldn't hurt you if you would actually educate and inform yourselves more. Over 500,000 of you read a book called Unfreedom of the Press. You know what's going on in the press instinctively. It's common sense. And you also know the history of it and the extent of it because you read. They don't. Unfreedom of the Press is about how those entrusted with news reporting in the modern media are destroying freedom of the press from within. Not government oppression or suppression, not President Donald Trump's finger-pointing, this was written several years back, but present-day newsrooms and journalists, indeed social activism, progressive groupthink, Democrat Party partisanship, opinion and propaganda passed off as news, the staging of pseudo-events, self-censorship, bias by omission, and outright falsehoods are too often substituting for old-fashioned objective fact-gathering and news reporting. A self-perpetuating and reinforcing mindset has replaced independent and impartial thinking. And the American people know it. Thus, the credibility of the mass media has never been lower. This book could easily have been 10 times in its current length, but that would make it unreadable for most. Nonetheless, I mean, even its current length, it's unreadable for some, apparently. Much ground is covered and research undertaken, and many authors and scholars consulted as the history of the American press and the evidence of its decades-long demise are carefully examined. The purpose of Unfreedom of the Press is to jumpstart a long overdue and hopefully productive dialogue among the American citizenry on how best to deal with the complicated and complex issue of the media's collapsing role as a bulwark of liberty, the civil society, and republicanism, ranging from the early newspapers and pamphlets promoting the principles set forth in the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, to the subsequent party press and transparent allegiance to one party or the other, to the progressive approach of so-called professional reporting, and now the ideologically driven advocacy press of today. So for those of you who read this book, this is not new. What's new is the gentleman had the courage to come forward, for which he should be thanked. Unlike the early Patriot Press, today's newsrooms and journalists are mostly hostile to America's founding principles, traditions, and institutions. They do not promote free speech and press freedom, despite their self-serving and self-righteous claims. Indeed, they serve as societal filters attempting to enforce uniformity of thought and social and political activism centered on the progressive, a.k.a. American Marxist ideology and agenda. Issues, events, groups, and individuals that do not fit the narrative are dismissed or diminished. Those that do fit the narrative are elevated and celebrated. Of course, This paradigm greatly influences the culture, the government, and the national psyche. It defines a media-created reality, whether or not it has a basis in true reality, around which individuals organize their thoughts, beliefs, and in some cases, their lives. Yet there is mystery and opacity that surround all of it. And if one dares to question or criticize the motives and work product of this enterprise or aspects of it, that is, the reporting by one or more newsrooms, the response is often knee-jerk and emotionally charged, with the inquirer or critic portrayed as hostile to press freedom and the collective media circling the wagons around themselves. Bears remembering that the purpose of a free press, like the purpose of free speech, is to nurture the mind, communicate ideas, challenge ideologies, share notions, inspire creativity, and advocate and reinforce America's founding principles. That is, to contribute to a vigorous, productive, healthy, and happy individual and to a well-functioning civil society and republic. And the media are to expose official actions aimed at squelching speech and communication. But when the media function as a propaganda tool for a single political party and ideology, they not only destroy their own purpose, but threaten the existence of a free republic. It is surely not for the government to control the press, and yet the press seems incapable of policing itself. We must remember, we are not merely observers. We are the citizenry. We, the people, for whom this nation was established and for whom it exists, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, and I quote, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and serve the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Hence, we must demand a media worthy of our great republic. And we begin the process by informing ourselves about those institutions and individuals and their practices and standards who, by their own anointment, proclaim the high-minded obligation of informing us. That's the three-page introduction on freedom of the press. It only gets better after that. So it is somewhat curious that this book that was number one on the New York Times bestseller list for a month or two, maybe three, but sold over 500,000 copies, received virtually no notice on any conservative newsroom other than on the internet. Why would that be? I'm not saying opinion makers, I'm talking about newsrooms. Now comes forward Yuri Berliner, a veteran of the public radio institution. And he says the network lost its way when it started telling listeners how to think. And you already know this. What's unique here is that somebody's come forward, still works at NPR. So he comes forward at potential personal attack against him. And that's what they've started to do. And he says in the free press, and I will note that the New York Times opinion page or book review section never reviews my books. Not when Barry Weiss was there, and not since. And that's okay. They would just trash him anyway. He said, you know the stereotype of the NPR listener, an EV driving, worldly playing, tote bag carrying, coastal elite. It doesn't precisely describe me, but it's not far off. I'm Sarah Lawrence, educated, was raised by a lesbian peace activist mother. I drive a Subaru, and Spotify says my listening habits are most similar to people in Berkeley. I fit the NPR mold. I cop to that. So when I got a job here 25 years ago, I never looked back. As a senior editor on the business desk, where news is always breaking, we've covered upheavals in the workplace, supermarket prices, social media, and AI. It's true NPR has always had a liberal bent, but during most of my tenure here, an open-minded, curious culture prevailed. We were nerdy, but not knee-jerk activists or scolding. In recent years, however, that has changed. Today, those who listen to NPR or read its coverage online find something different, the distilled worldview of a very small segment of the U.S. population. If you're conservative, you will read this and say, duh, it's always been this way, but it hasn't. Actually, it has. Maybe not at NPR, but certainly in the last multiple decades. For decades, since its founding in 1970, a wide swath of America tuned into NPR for reliable journalism, and gorgeous audio pieces with birds singing in the Amazon. Millions came to us for conversations that exposed us to voices around the country and the world, radically different from our own, engaging precisely because they were unguarded and unpredictable. No image generated more pride within NPR than the farmer listening to Morning Edition from his or her tractor at sunrise. Back in 2011, although NPR's audience tilted a bit to the left, it still bore a resemblance to America at large. 26% of listeners described themselves as conservative, 23% middle of the road, 37% as liberal. By 2023, the picture was completely different. Only 11% described themselves as very or somewhat conservative, 21% middle of the road, 67% were very or somewhat liberal. We weren't just losing conservatives, we were also losing moderates and traditional liberals. An open-minded spirit no longer existed within NPR, and now, predictably, we don't have an audience that reflects America. That wouldn't be a problem for an openly polemical news outlet serving a niche audience, but for NPR, which purports to consider all things, it's devastating, both for its journalism and its business model.